Hello and welcome to another edition of the KKFI Arts Magazine Show. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. Glad to have you with us here on this Monday morning, much nicer Monday morning than it was last Monday, here on the Arts Magazine Show, right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station, right here in Kansas City. Some very fun things to talk about during the course of the hour today. And boy, I could babble on, but I think I should get right to that. We're going to journey on first down to Olathe. We haven't talked in a while to Brad Zimmerman. He is the artistic director down at the Chestnut Fine Arts Center, located on Chestnut Street in Olathe, Kansas. Welcome back, Brad. Nice to have you. Brad brought with him famous, well, as I put when I posted what was going to be on the show this week, I said, Broadway actress, and that's true, of course, it's perfectly true, Valerie Fagan is her name. She is playing the role of, and singing the role of Patsy Cline in the show, which is being presented at the Chestnut, always Patsy Cline. But Valerie told me she also does Ethel Merman, too.
We were talking about that. Ethel Merman or Patsy Cline.
Those are two good ones.
Very, exactly.
Let me tell you about Valerie. If you don't remember from her last visit here, what we discussed, it was very interesting, wasn't it? She has appeared on Broadway opposite Nathan Lane and Bebe Neuwirth.
In the Addams Family.
That was in the Addams Family. I bet that was fun to do.
Oh, it was so much fun.
You had multiple roles, I believe you told
me. I would sometimes I would go on as old grandma at 80 years old during the day in the matinee. Then at night I would do the young next door neighbor and switch costumes, black out my teeth for grandma, put on a red wig for Alice. It was a great job.
But you didn't do both at the same time?
No, I think they'd want that to save money.
They probably would. The characters don't appear at the same time.
Well, you know, in understudy rehearsal, though, I'd run back and forth down the table, you know, and I would be playing both roles in understudy rehearsal.
Have you play Louise then as well?
Tom. Yeah, exactly. Producers always want to save money.
Well, that's an interesting side. Do Patsy and Louise ever on stage at the exact same time?
Yeah, they are.
It's a two-woman show.
Well, that would be difficult.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
But she has done more than that. She has appeared in Forbidden Broadway.
Yes, where we play about 25 characters in Forbidden Broadway. Yeah.
The touring version. Now, it is a touring version of Man of La Mancha with
Robert
the late
Goulet.
Robert Goulet.
He was wonderful. Talk about just having Robert Goulet sing to you. Oh, I thought this is a dream come true.
Does he just hum in the dressing room?
Oh, he still has this beautiful voice. Back then, he called me kid. He's like, hey, kid, let's go do a show. Yeah. Hey, kid. You know, he was so talented.
Such a beautiful voice.
When I would see him on television or in films, he looked like he had such great
presence.
Lung power.
And, he
presence.
Did.
And I remember when he passed away, they said he was awaiting a lung transplant.
Oh,
when
really?
He passed away.
Wow.
That's according to the papers, if that's correct.
I'm sure it's true.
And he was not a tall man, though.
No, he wasn't. You know, surprisingly enough, you know, I'd take off my boots in some of the scenes. You know, I'm not a small woman. I'm 5'9", you know, but he was probably about my height or a little bit taller than that.
Really?
But
okay.
You'd think that he would be.
Well,
he
with
was
that
such
imposing
a,
voice.
Oh, you'd yeah. think with that voice and that yeah. presence, he'd be like 6 foot. Six. Now, of course, he was that to me.
Oh, yeah. Very impressive presence.
Oh, yeah.
So. Man of La Mancha was one of his standards, as well as Camelot. He was in that.
Oh, yeah.
I heard he was wonderful as Arthur in Camelot.
Well, he originated the role of Lancelot, you know, early in his
career.
Oh,
that's right. How could I forget that? He was
Lancelot.
The first Lancelot. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, that in the film, you mean the film version, Brad?
Oh, I think
it was
on
the Broadway.
Broadway.
I think that's what made
Broadway?
Him a star.
Yeah.
He was the first Lancelot, I believe.
He told me he was a kid from Canada. I forgot this.
Yeah.
Yes. And they discovered him, and they brought him to New York, and he had an incredible career. Yeah.
He did. Well, you've worked with some impressive people.
I work with a lot of stars, which makes it easier to play Patsy Cline. I'm like, I know what stars look like up close.
<That's>
I know what the stars
She's
look
certainly
like.
Certainly a star as well. Oh, but you write as well, Val. You co-wrote.
I co-wrote Six Women with Brain Death, and we played at the Unicorn right down the street.
Now, my note said that was the premiere of that show.
It was the premiere. We were going to do it in someone's living room. We said, let's get together and just have fun and write a show. And we were like, okay, no one's going to come, but we're just going to do it in the living room. And then Cynthia Levin put it in her old space. Remember the old space? And it was kind of a converted school,
wasn't it?
That was off of a Southwest traffic.
Yeah.
Yes, and it took off. I'll never forget our opening night, just wondering, are people people going to buy this? Because back then, Six Women with Brain Death was crazy.
It was pretty out there. Yeah.
It was out there. Yeah. It was strange. And people loved it.
And that was, what, about 1984 or
1980,
so?
Yeah, about 84, 85.
Okay.
I was... Yeah, still in college. It was my senior year in college.
That was very successful, as I recall.
Yeah.
It was so successful. That was a show that was unbelievable, and a lot of women would see it, and that ran for, I think, like 10 or 8 years in San Diego.
Wow.
It was a really big hit on the West Coast. Really big hit.
It was a big hit here.
It was.
It was a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, I think they brought it back 3 times.
They may have. Yeah.
Was Stasha in it? R. Louise?
A different version, yeah.
Yeah, Stasha did it.
Yeah,
if you find
did.
A funny woman in Kansas City of a certain age, they've done the show. Yeah.
So you have performing credits, you have writing credits.
Banjo credits. With
really?
Yes, well, Brad, remember last show? Brad,
with the banjo on my knee?
Yeah, yes. Brad had me playing the guitar and the banjo, you know. So he's putting me through the ringer. Now I'm singing country western music, so, you know.
Have you done this particular show before?
I've never done this show before. And it was was it a challenge. I mean, I have been on Broadway, and I'm just as nervous stepping on stage doing Patsy, because people love Patsy. She's an icon, you know, so you have such big shoes to fill. And I was telling Brad the other day, I said, you know, the first show on Thursday, I felt like I wasn't reaching the audience the way I should, because I was trying to sound like Patsy. And I thought, you know, I went back to the drawing board on Friday, and I said, what's going on, Val? And it's because she sang so much from her heart. She was about truth. She was about, you know, singing about her husband, her children. And so I redirected the interpretation. I wouldn't call it a Forbidden Broadway interpretation, but I'm used to doing, you know, famous women. I thought, I have to come from my heart. I have to give a little bit more. I had an acting teacher who said, if it costs you on stage, you know you're doing your job. If you come off stage and you think, okay, that cost me a little bit, meaning you brought a little bit more of your, you know, your own experiences.
Your soul.
And I noticed, wow, we had incredible audiences on Friday and Saturday. And I thought, okay, now I'm connecting to them.
Oh, an actor once told me that he was known for playing villains. And he said, there's a little bit of the villain in all of us. We just have to find it.
Oh, the villains are the most fun to play.
Yeah.
I love playing villains.
Yeah. You know, Patsy, and the lady in the show, played by Stasha.
Stasha Case, her friend. Who's so brilliantly funny.
Yeah. She plays Louise, the friend of Patsy Cline, and tells really all of the story associated with Patsy
and their relationship.
They were pen pals.
Yeah.
And one night together, and when Patsy came over to Louise's house, and they made bacon and eggs and had girl time and enjoyed that, and that relationship lasted for years. Then afterwards, telephone calls
and letters,
and she reads a lot of the letters in the show.
It's really touching.
Very sweet part of the show.
Yeah, it's more of the personal side of Patsy Cline, but don't get us wrong, folks. Lots of Patsy songs.
Oh, 26, I think.
Yeah.
26. Don't remind me. 26 songs. On Saturday, though, every single song, the audience started applauding the minute I started the song.
Yeah.
So it's so exciting, you know, just to feel what that love for Patsy is. People love Patsy Cline.
She's been gone for 50 years.
That's a long time.
50 years.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like it.
How would we know? Patsy would be 80 years old right now.
Oh,
isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
About how old was she when she died in a plane crash?
She was 30 years old.
She really only had a career for 6 years. Isn't that amazing that she became so famous in 6 years? Because I think, what was it, the talent show, the Arthur Godfrey talent show? And she started when she was 25, and that's when Louise heard her. And from between 25 and 30, she became Patsy Cline, the Patsy Cline that we all know. And that's amazing if you think about that. 5 years. That's amazing.
So in 5 years, 26 memorable songs.
Memorable songs where people are so touched.
She started earlier than that, but she became a star, as you know. They say in the show that, you know, she began in 1957, but people didn't even know who she was at that point as she was beginning her career. And
we say in the show, there's a famous wagon wheel dress. Do you remember? Mm-hmm. It's like an iconic Patsy Cline dress.
It's what she wore in her last concert here in Kansas City. And then she died in the plane crash, leaving Kansas City on her way to Nashville.
Isn't that amazing? And her mom made that dress by hand.
Yeah.
Her mom made her dresses.
And the dress survived?
I don't know. Do you think the dress survived?
I don't know, but that's the kind of dress that's Nashville. Associated with her is the wagon wheel
Yeah, when
dress.
I come out in the wagon wheel dress, you can hear the audience. It's great to hear the audience reaction, you know, because we try to recreate that wagon wheel dress.
Yeah. I wonder how many people are still around that remember her last concert. Here. Was it at the Municipal Auditorium or the music hall?
I had a gift from one of the cast members from one of the productions. I have one of the original posters in the dressing room. I'm not sure what the location was, but I'll check it out.
But it was here in Kent City. How ironic that would be. We're speaking with Brad Zimmerman, the artistic director, if I didn't just say that, the Chestnut Fine Arts Center, and Valerie Fagan, who plays the role and sings the role of Patsy Cline in Always Patsy Cline in the middle of its run. Well, not in the middle, because it goes for a long time. Next performance will be Thursday the 23rd at 8 o'clock p.m. Performances continue then Friday and Saturday evenings, a Sunday afternoon matinee, and it's basically like that for, the next 3 weekends?
And we also will start adding Saturday matinees in February, so we'll have opportunities 5 times a week then in February to come see the show.
There are several Saturdays when you have 2 shows scheduled
already.
It's really selling.
And is that hard, doing shows in the afternoon and then in the evening?
Well, I'm not a morning person, so.
Well, I mean, voice-wise.
Exactly. Well, I think so. I've come awake at 8 o'clock at night, so I have to get up pretty early.
The matinee's not till 3 o'clock.
I know, Brad has to remind me, like, Val.
So
some people
exactly
get up at 9 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
What are you doing the night before, Val?
So you're basically a night person.
I'm very much, because you're a theater person, and you really don't go home until, 12 o'clock at night, so then you're wired after the show. So I probably go to sleep every night around 2:30.
In my days as a cameraman, I once was part of the crew when someone interviewed Yul Brynner. And he said much the same thing.
Yeah.
He said, I arrange my sleeping and eating schedule so that I am at my peak of performance at 8:30 p.m.
Maybe that's what happened. I think I'm just lazy. That's funny.
Great way to go. Boy, you've worked with many famous people, and now you're playing a famous person.
Yeah.
You identify with her in various ways?
I do. Once I started approaching it as an actress, I was like, okay, we have some similar things. I don't think you can be a woman of a certain age and not have a string of romance problems in your past. So I was thinking, oh, that reminds me of this boyfriend, and that reminds me of that boyfriend, and oh, this one reminds me, So, yeah, there's a lot of similarity in Love's Lost. So there's some of that.
And a lot of Patsy's songs, from the way I listen to
most of them are about
that. I take it that they were personal.
And most of them are about men and how they treated her wrong. Well, not a lot of them.
That's country music for you.
Exactly. And there
You're Cheating Hard.
You're Cheating Hard. Yeah, what are some of the songs that, of course, Crazy. Crazy, which is about her husband, I'm sure, because her husband was not the best. So I think he
three cigarettes and an ashtray.
Three cigarettes and an ashtray.
The man in that one.
Yeah.
Well, I can see where a celebrity might have problems with that. I mean, she was the famous one.
Oh yeah.
And
yeah,
he was simply the husband of Patsy.
That would be hard
for some people. That would be hard to handle.
I think that'd be hard for anyone, to have a famous that you're just kind of Mr. Cline.
Yeah.
I think that would be tough.
Yeah.
That would be hard. You also have, and you mentioned her earlier, Stasha Case, who plays the role of the friend, Louise.
Really funny. I mean, she's really the comic relief, which was, it was kind of hard for me at first because I'm usually the comedian, so it was hard for me to kind of pass the mantle and say, you're not the comedian, Val, you're the straight woman, and Stasha is the comedian.
Right.
So you have to, step into those shoes and let her have the laughs, and she gets all the laughs.
And it's an enormous role because she just has
one
monologue where she talks to the audience and she tells the whole story. So it's quite an undertaking as an actress to just simply learn all of that, first of all, and then to connect that much with the audience. Throughout the evening, she just talks and talks. Yeah.
It's like I saw The View about a month or two ago, and there's a guy that comes on, The View, the show, that women love and that men are like, I can't watch that show.
Well, I think I've seen it once.
Yeah, it sounds like noise to men, but I love it. But there's a guy that comes on before the show and warms up the audience, and he's a comedian, and that's kind of Sasha's role in our show. Like, at the beginning, if they're a little bit of, you know, if they've had a hard day and they're not ready to just relax and watch a show, she warms them up, and she does.
Yeah.
You know, by the second act, they're laughing and having a great time, so... She's a really good comedian.
No, I'm reiterating myself, I know, but that was a real friendship. That was
a real friendship.
That wasn't just made up for the script and story.
No, they started writing back and forth. And
right, and her name is Louise Seeger is the character.
Louise was a single mom, I think.
Yes, yeah.
Raising two children. So I think Patsy kind of, even though she was married, she kind of related to that, you know, and being away. Patsy talks in the show and in her songs about being away from her little boy.
Right.
And it broke her heart, probably, that she had to be on the road paying the bills. And I can't imagine, you know, then she lost her life and he didn't have a mom.
No.
So, you know, her life was not easy at all. So I think that she probably was always torn between show business and her baby at home.
Yeah.
And we have moments in the show that talk about that.
Mm. Yeah, sweet moments.
Yeah. They do have their recordings, the big singing stars. But let's face it, for the most part, their life is on the road.
That's right.
It's on the road.
Yeah,
it's
they
a
give
lot
it up
of work.
For show business. Yeah.
Yeah.
They really do.
Yeah. Well, this is a long run at the Chestnut.
Yes, 7 weeks. Yeah.
Seven weeks.
Yes,
and
indeed.
We have how many sold out already? A lot.
Well, nearly all of our matinees are already sold out, but we will be accommodating those patrons with additional performances as needed.
Brad told me that on the way here.
Yeah.
That we might add shows. I was like, all right, I could do this for a year and be happy.
Oh. It's quite a...
Well, of course, doing Broadway, you do what?
Eight a week.
Always, so this is similar.
Four or five a week. It's not as hard as Broadway.
Yeah.
You know, but you're doing 26 songs.
I think we
could
sell 8 a week with this show. But
I know.
26 songs in one show. That's a lot even for a Broadway show.
Oh,
right?
It's a lot. Yeah.
It's a lot. You know, I just kind of, you know, think, okay, Val, let's just go out there and don't think that you're going to be singing 26
and
songs.
And Val also has it's literally a fashion show because she has probably 10 or 11 different costumes. So we have to have a dresser backstage because many times she walks on stage, sings one song, and then the story goes on to a new location, so she has to be in a different costume.
So I started doing cardio.
It's quite a fashion
to get through the show.
Yes.
Want to give credit to your costumer person?
Yeah, actually, Carolyn Robinson, who works in our office, coordinated all the costumes.
Beautiful costumes.
And we have two dressers that are very instrumental in making the show a success and have those all ready for Val to step into as she walks backstage, getting ready for the next song.
Yeah, well, obviously, it sounds like a long run, and it is a long run, but obviously you're going to have some big crowds. So I guess people need to get right to it. If they want information, the number to call down at the Chestnut Fine Arts Center in Olathe is 913-764-2121. I suppose arrangements can also be made online.
They can get information online, but they need to call the box office to get tickets.
ChestnutFineArts.com. That's the website to go to for the information. The Chestnut Theater is located at 234 North Chestnut, Olathe, Kansas, and if you map questing 66061, how ironic that the Chestnut Theater would be on Chestnut.
Isn't that amazing?
Well, you know something? You know, the Chestnut, I just found out this recently, the Chestnut is an old converted farmhouse, 100 years old. So it has so much charm and character. Like you walk in and you look up and you see these old beams that are 100 years old. It really has a feeling of... The only thing I can compare it to is I used to work at a place called the Mule Barn Theater. Do you remember that?
In Tarkio,
Missouri.
Oh, in Tarkio.
Yes.
Okay.
It was one of my first jobs. Exactly.
Yeah.
And you'd walk in. It was literally an old mule barn. And that was converted into a theater. And that's what the Chestnut kind of feels like to me. It's like an old converted farmhouse. Really great.
It has a charm all its own.
That's right. For those of you who have listened to Brad's past interviews with me, sorry, but I'm going to repeat myself. I have to because I have learned that there's always someone new listening that doesn't know this.
Yes.
But Brad actually lives at the theater.
I do. The theater is attached right to my home, and I walk downstairs and put on shows every day.
See, this is both good and bad, as we've learned in the past.
That's right. It's hard to escape work, but it's a joy, and it's what I've always wanted to do. So I'm living the dream.
People are interested, so I'm going to ask about how many do you seat there?
We We seat 102. And with the run of Patsy Cline, we will have over 3,000 people that will see the show. So
yeah.
We're going to get a lot of people in.
And it's a very intimate theater.
It is extremely intimate. I would say it's the most intimate theater in Kansas City.
I love it. That's what's wonderful.
You like being that close?
Oh, I like looking in their faces. That's why I said on the opening night, I was like, I'm not connecting with these people. And so, like I said, I went back to the drawing board, looked in their faces, and thought, I have to tell this like a story, like I'm talking about my troubles to my, you know, my friends. And, of course, it's just wonderful to see their reactions, to see the smiles coming back, to see the acknowledgement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're talking about your man trouble and a woman starts nodding and she's like, yeah.
Yeah, you can't hide behind the spotlight at the Chestnut.
You can't.
If you reach your hand out, you could touch them.
Yeah.
That's how close
they
are.
I love that as an actress. I love that. You know, that's why I do live theater. So you can have that no safety net. You see their faces. It's so rewarding. You know, it's wonderful. Yeah, and you get that at the Chestnut.
Are these, not authentic as far as being the same costumes, but the same style?
They are
that she would have
style,
worn?
And we tried to recreate the vintage look with all of the costumes. The wagon wheel dress was constructed to, you know, look exactly like the original dress, and then all of the, you know, the old pearl, the vintage sweater that she wears with the pearl buttons and everything that looks true to the period.
Yeah, period's very important.
Oh, yeah.
I wear a polka dot dress in the first scene that looks
beautiful.
Right out of Donna Reed. I love it.
Yeah.
Do you have any of the songs touch you especially personally?
Probably Crazy, of course.
Crazy.
And when you start singing that, you can hear people in the audience, you know, just go, oh, here comes, you know, here's Crazy.
That's
I wonder
the famous
why,
one,
why does Crazy, why does everyone love that song?
Well, I
guess
it's the one song that was most associated with her. It's her signature song, yeah.
And everyone can relate to
that.
Did
she have any one, she had a bunch of hits, but was any, what was her one biggest hit?
Well, I think Crazy was, and she's also the Walking After Midnight. Was
Walking
there,
After Midnight.
Was,
that was her first hit.
One, so,
in fact, I think that's what she sang on the Arthur Godfrey show.
It may have been.
So
yeah.
That's what really made her a star, Walking After Midnight.
Yeah.
And Crazy was the one that made her
a
legend.
She has a lot of songs that she sings, you know. Honky Tonk Angel. And
love Honky Tonk Angel. That's fun.
Yeah.
That's fun. We're doing a TV show in, 2 weeks?
Yeah.
I'll probably sing Honky Tonk Angel because that's my favorite song. Because it's fun, but it also tells a story, and it captures the flavor of that 1950s sound that they had. It was so rich and country,
and we have the steel guitar, which just adds so much to the making authentic country sound.
Yeah.
To hear him play every night.
Oh,
he's
sure.
played at the Grand Ole Opry. He's played all.
What's his name?
His name is Russ Weaver.
Uh-huh.
He's played everywhere. He's played at the Grand Ole Opry.
Yeah, he's played in Nashville, played in New York, but makes his living pretty much off of playing Patsy Cline shows and Hank Williams.
Oh, he's got it down.
Yeah, he's quite a player.
Yeah. I wonder if they ever met.
I don't know.
I should ask him. I don't want to insult him, though. I don't know how old. How old do you think Russ is? He's not old.
Not that old.
No, he's not that old.
No.
Yeah.
But at any rate, always Patsy Cline, running now. Performances actually pick up on Thursday evening and run through March the 2nd. But
that's
as Brad
right.
said, he may be adding some extra shows.
You never know.
You never know. So Brad likes to have guests. In his home.
I do.
And he has a bunch
of
them every
lots
night.
Of
big family reunions. Let me sing.
Well, I should ask Val after this, what do you have planned? You mentioned earlier you do Ethel Merman.
Yes, I just did Forbidden Broadway in, let me see, what was it? It was
in Florida.
In Florida.
Yeah,
and we just did a big show. And it was sold out, you know. That was for a gigantic audience, you know. So that's what was wonderful about literally going in a two-week span from an 800-seat house to Brad's Theater, you know. So, yeah, it's great that I get to do both.
Okay. Well, thanks so much for being with us.
Always a joy.
Shows resume on Thursday the 23rd, 8 o'clock p.m. Matinees are scheduled periodically, usually on Saturday. As
far
as the
schedule,
I have
Sunday matinees as well.
and Sunday matinees. That's right. Every Sunday at 2 o'clock p.m.
That's right.
Is an afternoon matinee as well at the Chestnut Fine Arts Center. The number to call, 913-764-2121. The Chestnut is located at 234 North Chestnut Street in Olathe. It's right off of the main drag. What
right.
is the name of that?
Santa Fe.
Santa Fe. So I'll take the
Santa Fe and Chestnut.
Santa Fe and Chestnut. You know, Olathe, Kansas. Thanks so much for
being
with us.
Follow the cars to Pepsi-Cola.
Always great shows by Brad. He fills the house, and in his case, it literally is the house. Thanks to Brad for being here. And with Valerie
as well.
Thank
you so much.
Valerie Fagan, you've seen her on Broadway, perhaps. See her around here, probably more in the future.
Yeah, I hope so.
Thanks so much for being with us. We're going to take our break. When we return, we have much more to tell you about the toughest kid in the world. No, we're not talking about me, no. When we return, you're listening to the Arts Magazine radio program right here on KKFI, 90.1 FM.
Freeze Frame! Hi, I'm Russ Simmons with Freeze Frame, KKFI's weekly look at the newest cinematic fare at your local theaters. Meryl Streep proves once again why she's America's most celebrated actress with a showy turn in August Osage County. The big screen adaptation of Tracy Letts' Pulitzer Prize-winning Broadway play is a mixed bag, however. Streep plays a drug-addled matriarch of a dysfunctional Oklahoma family that reunites after her husband's death. More bile is spewed in this bitter and caustic comic drama than in any movie in recent memory, a clear example of something that must have worked better on the stage than on the screen. Impressive supporting performances from Julia Roberts and Margot Martindale help, but don't be fooled by the ads. August Osage County isn't a lighthearted comedy. It's a dark, disturbing, and meandering story populated with churlish characters. Her is a whip-smart science fiction romance from the uber-talented filmmaker Spike Jonze. Joaquin Phoenix plays a writer who, in the near future, falls in love with his computer's operating system, voiced by Scarlett Johansson. This brilliant premise allows Jonze to examine the nature of love and relationships, as well as the meaning of personhood. Phoenix's character, however, is extremely wishy-washy, preventing the film from being as compelling as it might have been. Lone Survivor is a well-made action flick that tells the true story of a Navy SEAL operation in Afghanistan that went terribly wrong. Mark Wahlberg leads the cast in a gritty combat flick that puts the audience in the middle of the harrowing battle. It may lack a point of view, but it's impressively intense. Tom Clancy's heroic CIA analyst returns to the big screen in Jack Ryan's Shadow Recruit, a familiar but effective political thriller. Chris Pine from Star Trek fame steps into the role, which serves as a complete reboot of the franchise. Kevin Costner plays his boss, and Kenneth Branagh does double duty as the villainous Russian capitalist and the movie's director. It loses credibility along the way, but it's rousing enough to please action fans. Well, that's it for this edition of Freeze Frame. Until next time, I'm Russ Simmons with Fox 4 and KKFI FM.
Freeze Frame!
Wednesday night is Arts Night on KKFI. At 6 p.m., it's Art Speak Radio, followed by the award-winning From Arc to Microchip at 6:30. Then it's live radio theater on L.A. Theater Works from 7 to 9 p.m., followed by chamber music with Dr. Mike. Get your arts on Wednesday night on KKFI.
This week, it's a special rebroadcast of one of my favorite interviews on Interfaith Voices, a conversation on wisdom and aging with Sister Joan Chittister.
We don't have 30% of our life in some sort of stand-up position, half dead. We have 30% of life left to live.
I'm Maureen Fiedler. That's next time on Interfaith Voices.
Tuesday at noon, right before the Jazz Disciple.
And welcome back to the Arts Magazine show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. We're going to journey on over to the Theater for Young America. They're all over, really, but the four performances for the most part are at the H&R Block Theater in Union Station. That's 30 West Pershing Road, Level 3. And we have the cast here. Is it the entire cast? With
yes.
me today?
Yes,
it is. We're honored to have the entire cast of the show, The Toughest Kid in the World. As I said earlier, we're not talking about me this time. But it is a story. It's a learning experience as well as an interesting story as well. It's also been one of the touring shows, I believe, for the
that
show.
Is
Yeah, yeah, we're going to tour the show.
Yeah, pull the microphone up closer to John Mulvey.
Yes.
Yes, welcome. Thank you for being here. You're the stage manager and for the show and serve, you had said you had a cameo on the show, but you have a history with the show as well.
That's right. That's right. This is a show, Theater for Young America. We've been doing this show each year since about 1996. And it's a show that we perform down at Union Station at our theater. And we also take it on the road. We tour with it into the Kansas City, Kansas middle schools. And so it's a show that's appropriate, you know, for kids. It's, you know, fourth, fifth, sixth grade. And it's a show about conflict resolution.
Mm-hmm.
And
I'll bet so. Probably touches perhaps a little on bullying, things of that nature.
Absolutely. We have different, we kind of see it from different sides, from an aggressive side, from a passive respect, and then through the other characters, we see a collaborative, you know, the choices that you can make, you know, to avoid violence.
Yeah, there's a story to it, of course. Would you like to tell the story? Would one of the others of you like to tell this story? Who would like to do that? Okay, you are, help me out,
Will Andrew's wife.
And what role do you play in the show?
I play TK, the toughest kid in the world.
You are the toughest.
I am the
toughest.
Well,
you look
I'm
pretty tough to me.
It's typecasting, that's what it is.
tell us about the story.
What it is, it's about this group of actors who are literally putting on a show. That's the setup for the play. And in a fit of over-exaggeration, I punch through the green the makeup mirror, and I punch through, and that hole leads out to the audience, and we just start the show, and I get a little too into my role. I don't really do what we were supposed to be, in quotes, rehearsing, and I hurt one of my fellow actors, and then we learn, all of us, me probably more so, learn how to, that violence isn't always the answer, and that's the show, and it's quite the journey that I feel all of us go on.
I think it's great that the show occasionally gets taken around to schools, because let's face it, more and more that seems to be happening in schools around the country, around the world, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead.
What?
Tell the people your name first.
I'm Shauna Downing. I play Connie, who's kind of a constant character in the show. What's great about this show is it does touch on bullying and how we can resolve those issues, but it also talks about bigger issues outside of bullying, such as school shootings, tragic events that have happened most recently in the past few years, and it addresses how to handle those internally and externally. So the bullying is a huge aspect on a learning to deal with it for young kids, but it's also how can we deal with our emotions in a way that don't harm others, and how can we express ourselves and learn how to speak up about problems and things that we see or things that we hear in regards to other people and how that world works. And
yeah.
So it's a good piece. It's a very quick piece, too. We definitely flash these great scenes very quickly, but with lots of information, and in a way that it does hit home to not only the kids, but to us, too, as performers.
Yeah, well, how does your character fit into the story? We've heard Will talk about how he fits into the story. How do you fit in your interactions with Will and some of the others as well?
I play kind of the constant, the median of this conflict resolution.
Oh, you're mediated.
I don't actually have a violent.
But you do play a bully.
I do play a bully at one point. I also play a mother. I play a teacher.
I see.
I play someone who is...
You play a sparker of conflict.
A sparker of conflict, so to speak. So I tend to help enhance the story in a way where the story progresses and the characters progress. But I also have my own story within those characters to help utilize, such as the teacher's character, an authoritative figure, someone you can go and talk to, someone who is very passionate about children speaking up and not being afraid and not not holding back how they feel. With the mother, I'm a frustrated mother, but I'm also someone that's used to, I don't know the word. I can't even think about the word for the mother. Someone who is helping TK learn different ways of dealing with solutions when it comes to family. Because a lot of his background is family infused, a lot of his anger and his frustration.
There's a lot of frustration. The backstory of TK is that his father is abusive and his father leaves. And then the mother remarries, and the brother, the stepbrother, is a bully. And so TK enacts his frustration out on others. It basically a very cyclical way of looking at bullying, which is, I think, an accurate portrayal.
It seems to be that way, doesn't it? It seems to be very secular.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. What character do you play, ma'am? Tell people your name.
I'm Masha Klima.
Masha Klima, and you play... How does your character fit into all this?
I play the role of Serena, and she... I don't know. She's the... She's the one who doesn't want to fight physically.
The polar opposite to TK.
Yeah.
The passive person as opposed to the aggressor.
There's a scene with the teacher where she's telling the teacher about TK and about him wanting to fight. So she kind of helps to solve that problem, but she's also scared because she doesn't want to get made fun of for being a tattletale. I think tries to solve a lot of the problem in quiet ways.
Is she successful at that?
sort of.
At times?
By the end, yes. We all kind of collaborate and help him to TK.
I'm going to guess now she probably is the one with perhaps the most deepest feelings, the most sensitive.
She sings about it. So, and toward the end, she just gets so frustrated with TK not listening to anyone else that she's just like, listen here, I'm going to tell you how it's done, and you're going to learn. And so she kind of speaks out toward the end.
Internalizes a lot of her feelings. She internalizes a lot of her feelings, so she does have a conflict of herself, of beating herself up for her own actions. And that's, we deal with that as well, those internalizing, that internalizing violence to yourself, like how, yes, we can be aggressive and it can be dangerous to others, but you can also hurt yourself if you keep your feelings in.
Yeah.
So she does deal with that as a conflict.
Keeping things bottled up does cause internal problems, doesn't it?
And I dealt with that a lot in middle school. I was bullied.
Mm-hmm.
So I can relate, you know, trying to fit in, but trying to do the right thing.
I'm not always, of course, I'm not a psychologist. I don't know which is worse, keeping things bottled up and having to deal with that, or in some ways, well, violence is not good.
Right.
At least you're getting your feelings out in certain ways.
Well, and that's a fascinating thing, because in the play we discover that TK really isn't. He's just adding to the problem. He's not opening himself up. He's not accepting who he is. He's hiding that even more so. In fact, probably more so than Serena, the character that Masha plays, is. He keeps it bottled up, and it just explodes out of him. That's how he deals with it. And in doing that, he doesn't really deal with it at all.
Yeah, now, Bradley J. Williams, or Thomas, I'm sorry.
You're fine.
I know a Bradley Williams, I'm sorry. Bradley J. Thomas, you play the role of?
I play the role of trainer. I'm the in-show stage manager, as well as a fellow actor to the group. I'm also really the only one that knows exactly what's going on. Like, once TK punches out the makeup mirror and they step through, quote-unquote, the looking glass, I've been off stage that entire time. I actually come on and know exactly what's going on, why it's happening, and I push the story along.
Mm-hmm. You're like our guidance.
Yeah, I am. I guess what would be considered the adult of the group.
You lead all the transitions.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, there has to be adult figures in the show as well. If your character, now we're going to give advice to the young people here, what do you think you would tell them? If I were a teacher at that school, I think I'd try to deal with each one individually. But
exactly. I would say, be true to your emotions, but also don't let them govern you. Do not be afraid to speak up. So many times people are afraid to speak up, and that's when conflict happens, bad things happen. Mm-hmm. It's funny, it's talked about in the show, the word snitch comes up.
Uh-huh.
Because Masha's character, Serena, goes to Shauna's character of the teacher and asks, I've seen some things, some behavior that might transition into, something more, like a school shooting or some type of violence. And the word snitch is, she doesn't want to talk to the teacher because of that. She doesn't want to rat out her friend. And the teacher, explains that it's not snitching, it's saving lives.
Mm-hmm.
And
a lot of it's, that's true.
Yeah.
It's doing that.
And what I love about this script, Gene Mackey, our writer, he incorporated a lot of true stories into the work and the piece. So there's a lot of
weight to it.
And one thing, this is something we've been doing for a number of years. Gene wrote the play originally in like the 1980s and was performed at one time then. And it had a concept of dealing with the conflict with the Russians. And it was kind of during the Cold War. And then in the 90s, when the school shootings began to happen internally here in our own country, that he rewrote the play, he kind of adapted it and incorporated what was happening. And sadly, each year the play is updated. He updates the play with some information, and probably the biggest transformation of the play was after 2001. He rewrote the ending, but each year, like we've added the first day of rehearsal for this edition, this year's, we had a school shooting in New Mexico.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So, it's a sad fact that the play has to sort of adapt each year to what happens.
You have angry people, and in some instances you have people that have problems and unfortunately aren't believed. they have legitimate beefs, and they're not believed, and that probably makes that anger fester even more. It's a sad situation.
It is. Well, and the whole thing really about this is we don't have the magic button, like, if you always be passive, everything's cool, peace and love. No, it's each conflict demands its own response, and you have to think of what is the safest choice.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of times kids, they want to get back if, somebody does them wrong, you want to get back at them. But sometimes you have to think of the bigger picture. And that's really all that we're hoping to, illustrate to the kids, that you have to be thoughtful in
sure.
your choices.
They have a fine staff down at Theater for Young America.
Oh, they do.
Which one is directing this time?
This is by our lovely director, Valerie Mackey.
She is.
We want to say hello to her and send our love out to her. She is at home getting better.
Yes.
Well, what did she say to you at the beginning, each one of you? Have any of you done the show before?
No.
This is a brand new cast of four.
Except for John.
Except for John.
The first time we've had an all brand new cast in several years. Usually over the years we have some leftover, or not leftovers, but
no.
holdovers, I guess you could say.
Oh, there was a comedy group.
The leftovers.
Yes.
With having a brand new cast of four people, you have a brand new cast of four eyes, mm-hmm. brand new four of ears, of knowledge, of experience. And what's great is that, yes, they may have preempted some of what they've done in the past with this show, but it was a change also for them to bring in four new people, four new faces, because we all bring something different to the table, and that's what's exciting about doing the show. And then learning about it for all of us. Each of us have some kind of personal connection to this story, and that really helped infuse really understanding what this piece was about, and then taking that piece in our hands and presenting it to the public and to the kids, which is what I found very intriguing in this whole process, because we've only had about a week to learn lines and blocking.
And this rehearsal process, it was a little different from other previous shows. The first rehearsal, we didn't get on our feet. We did all table work. We read through and we went through the script. And like you said, Val Mackey, our director, went through and gave us individual direction. Her direction to me was that I had to stay true, because this is unlike anything else I've ever played. It really is. I'm, for those of you at home who can't see, I'm quite skinny. I'm a tiny person.
You look mean to me.
Yeah. Thank you. And so it was finding what does it mean to be tough? What does it mean to be a frightening individual, you know, and that was very hard. It was a very interesting journey. I'm more like Masha's character, who's very passive.
Is Masha as shy as you appear to be here?
I wouldn't say I'm a shy person.
Okay, that's good.
What I love about the role of Serena, so many people can relate to her. I relate to her a lot, and Will said he did too, but she's that person that I think everybody finds themselves in her at some point. They go through different little stories through the show, uh-huh. And I think at one point everyone can be like, oh, that's me, or... I was just like that, or...
Sure.
Yeah.
Now, Shauna has a variety of roles. Which one do you identify with the most?
I do identify...
Spar?
Yes.
Yeah, that's a
I actually, what's really funny, I do play a really 180 of characters, and I do actually identify with each of them. The one I believe to identify with more is the teacher. I've worked with kids in the past, and I enjoy working with kids and watching them learn and grow and live and experience life. So my heart really is into that teacher role, because I want, you know, I want the world to be a better place.
Well,
who doesn't? But it's really in the children where the world can be a better place. And the teacher is definitely passionate. She's definitely strong. She knows what she needs to do to get the results that are needed to be successful in this conflict that's happening. And I really relate to her in that manner. All the other ones I have, you know, personal quirks with as well. The mother is a frustrated mother who, I mean, that's common. You can easily be frustrated. Spar, who they mentioned earlier, is the sparring partner in one of the scenes for TK. And he's kind of rough and mean a bit, but funny in a way. And I definitely relate to the comedy in Spar and that character. So, and then Connie, who I actually play, she's being taken along on this journey with Trainer. And towards the end, you can kind of see Trainer and Connie becoming this umbrella of guidance for TK. And I definitely relate to Connie in that way, as well as being someone to assist in guiding someone with Trainer, and definitely going along and following, because to be able to be a successful individual, you have to learn to lead and follow, but you also have to know yourself.
Sure.
And I believe Connie knows who she is. So she has that ability to help out trainer in guiding both Serena and TK towards the resolution of their conflicts and issues. Yeah.
Now, I'm glad, Will, that you're into sparring about this. I think that's a great idea. If you can take out your frustrations in training or a punching bag or something yeah. like that, that might be a wonderful idea.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, in the show, trainer definitely trains TK, trains me how not to be mm-hmm. a vicious person, how to control that and how to use that more towards peace, how to, you know, join debate class and use that and, you know, take that energy and just funnel it. Use how to... TK is really like any other teenager. He has so much energy, he doesn't know how to do what to do with, you know, and he's in this spectacular situation, which is all too familiar to a lot of people, and, you know, and I feel like that is what makes him knowable. That's how, sure. you recognize him.
Well, yeah, Bradley. You.
And I love that the show is under the auspice of actors performing a show and an actor taking something too far.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, that sets up us to be able to play in a real-world setting things as actors we get to do in our professional lives. So, I mean, and it's funny because TK actually ends up punching Trainer in the real world. He actually ends up punching him. He takes something too far. And that's what kind of sets up, I guess it would be an intervention for TK to realize that aggressive conflict, physical fighting, isn't the solution. You know, that, and, you know, it also goes about bringing Serena's character, Masha's character, to knowing that the passive way, laying down and just having people walk over you, is not the solution.
No,
neither the solution
one.
Is a win-win.
Sure, sure. Performances begin, unless you've already had some that I have. Wednesday the 22nd at 10 o'clock in the morning. Thursday the 23rd at 10. Friday the 24th at 10. Friday the 24th.
And right.
Oh, I see here. Yes, I'm reading it wrong. Friday the 24th at 10. And then again at noon, correct?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Then Saturday the 25th at 2 o'clock p.m. I know some of the TYA shows also have an evening performance.
Not this time around.
Performances are at the H&R Block City Stage Theater in Union Station. Sometimes there's another show at night at Union Station, so mm-hmm. I understand now why the schedule is the way it is. It's at 30 West Pershing Road. The number to call, and this is the number for Theater for Young America, 816-460-2083. You can inquire about tickets to The Toughest Kid in the World or any of their upcoming season, and also online at TYA.org. Quickly, I'm running out of time. I only have a couple of minutes. February, one of your well-known shows as well, Harriet Tubman in The Footprints of Freedom, also written by Gene Mackey.
That's correct.
Yes.
Yeah.
That will be, and then in March, June B. Jones and A Little Monkey Business.
Yeah.
The always entertaining April show, at least it begins in April, No Dogs Allowed.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, and then June, Cinderella.
Yeah. Cinderella.
And I must say, this is our 40th anniversary season.
I'll bet so. Yeah. And the touring show, Triple Play.
Yeah, that goes on.
Sometimes the show you're doing tours as well, or has.
Yeah, we'll be touring this next week in Kansas City, Kansas, to a number of middle schools.
Yeah, that'd be great for them. And then the regular touring show, I guess, will be Triple Play, which is, I guess, three shows
in one. They get three fables.
I want to thank all of you for coming and telling us about it. Just hearing the interview might have helped some people, but learning about the show and seeing the show might well further that conflict resolution. It's a hard thing to deal with. People deal with it in different ways. Some people go more inside their self. Some people go more outside of their self.
Absolutely.
And a balance has to be found in some way to make it all work in this world of ours. Lots of conflict, and let's face it, probably always will be a lot.
That's
of
right. We've got to live with it. We've got to deal with it.
That's right. Thank you so much for being with us. John Mulvey, the stage manager. Bradley J. Thomas, who is the role of trainer. Then we have, did I write down all the names? TK, Will Andrews' wife.
Yeah, that's it.
Thank you. Masha Clymer as well. Shauna Downey as multiple roles. Yes. Did I get everyone in there?
Yes, yes you did.
Thanks all of you for
being
here. Thank you.
The Toughest Kid in the World opens this Wednesday the 22nd at Theater for Young America. That is located now in, at least the performances are at Union Station at the Art Center of Luxor. Thank you all so much for being with us. The number to call at TYA is 816-460-2083 and online on the web at tya.org. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
The Jazz Insider is next. That means great jazz. Also, stories behind some of your favorite jazz songs. That's always interesting to hear. Jazz being as free form as it can be. Sometimes these things happen at the spur of the moment. And you never know how it's going to come out. Jazz from 1 to 3. The blues then from 3 to 6. The blues are a staple here at KKFI. Right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio. So until next we meet, ladies and gentlemen, at that cross in the road, I'm Michael Hogue. We'll see you next time.